The Intentional Fatherhood Retreat is fast approaching, and we want to let you know that there are group rate tickets for five or more and also volunteer tickets. February 19th through 21, we are going to be in Costa Mesa, California, doing our first ever Fatherhood Retreat. We cannot wait to meet so many of you in person. We're going to have a whole new merch line coming out, so make sure you're ready for some sweet merch. And also, you're going to hear from so many wonderful, amazing, godly men on the journey of fatherhood. So if you haven't had a chance to get a ticket yet, go to intentionalfatherhood.org, grab your tickets today. Enjoy this week's episode. Welcome to the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast, where we give you a strong biblical framework and lots of practical ideas on how to live intentionally as a father and a husband. I'm Brooke Moser.
And I'm Justin Whitmore Early, and we're your hosts to guide you through the many roles and challenges that God is calling you to live intentionally as a father. We're following a visual framework that you can check out at intentionalfatherhood.org, and it's going to help you break down fatherhood into eight callings.
And in each one, we're going to talk about how God made you to be a father and what practical habits you can start trying today in order to live intentionally into that calling.
So come along with us as we follow Jesus on this journey towards being more intentional fathers.
Welcome back to the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast. Justin and I, and a very special guest today.
A very special guest.
Hi, everybody.
Justin, will you please introduce our very special guest?
My favorite, my everything, my wife, Lauren. Welcome.
Hi.
The first lady on the Fatherhood Podcast ever. We are excited. So I knew I was coming out to Richmond to do season two, and we were like, we have got to have a conversation together. So thank you for making time. I know the boys are at school, and we're right in the middle of the day.
During their first week back to school.
Oh, which is busy.
Not a big week for you, right? This is fine.
Would it be convenient for us to be tied up all week? And I have to say, beyond as we get started, this is a fun bonus episode, and we're going to get into all of the details, whatever that means. We're going to go deep. But I also want to say thank you to everyone who's listening and who has rated and subscribed and taken a minute to like leave a review. It's been so helpful. And Lauren, I was saying to, I think in like season two somewhere, I was saying, you know, there's a lot of ladies that listen but don't subscribe. And I just want to give full permission. Like, ladies, like, listen, subscribe.
Feel he free. Says that there are women out there women who listen
but don't
almost
subscribe?
Furtively.
No, at least I mean, not this is not the only sample, but about four or five ladies that I have talked to have been almost like, yeah, I listen, like almost like sheepish about it. I'm like, no, it's great. Like, please do. It's an
I
honor.
I listen to it. It's
yeah,
great.
See?
It's encouraging.
See, there we go.
I subscribe.
I'm so honored that you do,
actually. Even on my non-dominant podcast app, I subscribe. Can we get it on Overcast? Come on, just a shout
What's
out.
What's your non-dominant podcast
Yeah, what is it?
Overcast? I don't like Apple Podcasts. So maybe the other women out there are using Overcast and you just missed us.
I am so, have so many questions.
Well, we need to get it out there.
You just undid my brain right now.
I told you, Justin, I was like, can you get on Overcast for me? And you forgot.
I need to do that.
Are you on Overcast? Is this on Overcast? I don't know if it is.
It's not.
No, we need
so
to
So I had
it
to go
Overcast.
To Apple to subscribe, but I did.
Yeah. Okay, well, you
and
know
it
what
was
I'll.
Great.
Well, thank you. This is a great note. I'll talk to our team.
Yeah,
team, team, wonderful team.
We'll everybody really it. Cares about this. Hey, I have a question, though. Did
hey.
We. No, not like that. Did
fight,
we have
fight.
Any voice memos from female listeners? I think they were all male, right?
We didn't. I don't know if they felt comfortable to. So
yeah.
maybe
well,
this
so
is...
this would be another fun invitation because
yes.
we've gotten such great voice memos
yes.
sent to hello@intentionalfatherhood.org.
Yep.
And, you know, tell us your name, tell us where you're from.
Yep.
And leave a 60-second voice memo asking a question.
Yeah.
We played some for Lauren last night.
Oh, it was,
that was super fun to listen to.
The questions
to
were great. And yeah, ladies, if you have questions for us,
yeah.
like marriage questions
yeah.
or like parenting that
stuff.
Are relevant, I'd be happy to jump back on. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, there it is.
We got to see episode two. I know the bummer was Elizabeth was, she was trying to come as well. And that would have been fun to do all four. But
at some point, all four of us will
well,
get there.
The hard part
the only
was,
busier week than the first week of school is the week before
yeah,
school starts.
It's true. Yeah,
which is where
true.
You guys are, right?
We are, yeah. You guys started school. This yeah. was like, yeah, this is the week before school. So we were, yeah, she was like, I would love to. And unfortunately, I think I would be undone. And I was like,
yeah.
yep, I see the boundary. You said mm-hmm. it. That's good. So we wanted to welcome the first female voice in this space. We're very happy to have you. And so what we decided to do today for fun was we want to talk through some different topics as it relates to fatherhood and also hearing from, you know, obviously Lauren, your perspective, but also, you know,
there's these dynamics between Justin and I. We're two dads doing this, and it's just fun to hear of the other side. We talk about these concepts. We talk about how life looks, and that's our perspective, and I think it's pretty accurate. We try to be as honest and as full of integrity, but some of these things, they flesh out differently for moms. They can feel different. The experience can be different. And so I think this is really like check your work type conversation. Is this true? No, not fully, but I think the point really is we have some stuff to talk about, but to also just get a window into your guys' life and your story. So here's what I want to do. I didn't talk about this, but I'd love to do this. I would love to hear Lauren, because I know I've heard you on this like 1,000 times.
Okay.
I would love to hear Lauren's perspective on just a little bit of the story, your guys' story of how you met, and a little bit of like the love story from your perspective.
Okay.
And then we'll get it, because that's where this started, right? You guys, it started, and then we'll get into all the stuff, but I think it'd be fun for a little backstory.
Justin and I met in college. He was a year ahead of me at UVA, University of Virginia.
Yes.
Wahoo-wah.
Wahoo-wah.
Yeah. I didn't get involved into a Christian fellowship until my second year, kind of beginning of my second year. And so it was his third year at UVA. And that's how we met. I think, so he was an MC on at our camp. We had a weekly fellowship gathering on Thursday nights,
so kind of
like a Young Life, or so we were with crew, but like a worship service. Okay. Our leader would give a talk, but he would be the MC up front, you know. Yeah. So he's like golden boy, cool guy. I was like,
you were already talking in front of people?
Oh yeah, of course.
Not a boy.
I like talking in front of people. It's been a thing for a while.
Yeah. So I was just, you know, I knew who he was. Okay. And then this is so like funny about our relationship. So the first kind of date we had was he invited me to come see his punk rock hardcore, screamo band play. And he played the drums and was the screamer.
I didn't know that. You were the screamer?
Yeah.
I have so many questions.
Yeah, you want me to do it? Right?
Yeah,
no, I'm not going to do it.
I want to know. I mean, I want to know the technique. I don't want to hear you do it right now, but we have to talk later.
Anyway, which was in the basement of a sketchy sushi bar restaurant.
Oh, I love
and
this.
And so because it was kind of an intense crowd mosh pit environment, our good friend Rob Jefferson actually kind of was my chaperone to make sure I didn't get hurt. Wow. The show. But I was on the guest list
time. Shout out to Puck.
Yeah, shout out to Puck. That's Rob's nickname. And but then he asked me over winter break, he asked me out to coffee, and this is classic our dynamic.
I am a
truth
tell this
speaker
line.
And Justin,
I was like,
no, you have hey, coffee this is with my time.
Dang it.
You're done, dude. She's gone. Lauren, you
well,
before.
So like I will say this is one of the gifts of our marriage is Justin has softened my hard edges. He was like, do you want to get coffee? And I was like, I don't like coffee. And then I was like, oh, but I really like him. Oh. And he was like, or something else.
I persevered. I was like, how about lunch? Do you like lunch?
Boy.
Yeah. No, I think we did go to get coffee. I just got something else. Okay. You know, cider or something.
So you
love coffee now, of course.
Like,
he's
like
the
coffee.
One who
like,
did it.
Do you like me?
By fourth year, we dated for 2 years. By the end of college, I was like, where has coffee been all my life?
Wait. So I have this. Hold on one second. I have a question about this. You were so full of integrity in that moment that you were like, I have to answer the question honestly.
This is Lauren's oneness from the beginning.
Yeah, dude, and maybe just lack of maturity. I think I was also nervous. I think it was more like I didn't process quick enough because I was like, oh, this guy likes me. You know,
were you wearing a shirt? Did you have chest hair yet? Like, where were we at? In this
he had a
process?
Beard.
I can't remember.
Really long hair. Really long hair.
Oh, you had long.
Yeah, I had long hair.
He
this is big beard.
Very, yeah. People are always confused when they find out Justin's a 4 in the Enneagram. I'm like, well, you didn't know him in college.
Yeah.
I was barefoot.
I remember probably.
We had, mostly I found that out didn't wear season. Shoes, even in the winter.
I found that out this season, and I'm like, I know that. I know who you are.
Super long hair, and it was bleached blonde from being in San Diego one summer.
Yeah. I had spent the summer surfing in San Diego.
Yeah.
At the Summer Missions Project with Campus Crusade.
Okay. Yes. Which was, I did the next summer. It was amazing. Shout out San Diego. We have a special place in our heart for it. So we started going on dates like that winter break and then quickly realized we both things that we had in common that we love are driving with the windows down, blaring music. This was Garden State soundtrack kind of era.
Yeah. Yep.
Life of the mind stuff.
A little healthy trespassing.
Yeah.
Some healthy trespassing.
No, you gotta like push boundaries in good ways. I'm like for this with my boys. I'm like, I really hope you don't do drugs, but if you do a little healthy trespassing on the side, just don't get in trouble.
We would sit on the edge of rock quarries.
Yeah, we went to one of our dates was we climbed illegally, you know, a giant water tower on campus, and it was like in February. This is a Valentine's Day date.
These are naughty.
It was so cold though.
It was so cold. How cold it was. It was scary going down because our hands were numb. It was really hot, and we had to like climb down the ladder, but it was fine. I'm always up for adventure.
Wow. Also, life of the mind stuff. We were in a Shakespeare class together.
Yes.
Reading campus fellowship and deep conversations always been a thing.
Yeah. Oh. And then, we took a Shakespeare class together. That was like our second year dating. And then, Justin we're the same age, but he was young for his grade. So he's a year ahead of me in college. It's his senior year, fourth year at UVA. Okay. I think he was just mostly like, oh my gosh, like, I think this is the girl I'm supposed to marry, but I'm so young and she's not perfect. I thought,
wow. Yeah, it was going so well, it scared me. That's one way to put it.
Yeah, that is actually a great way to put it. And we both lived in campus, like houses off campus with like lots of other, like I lived with like 12 Christian girls in a big house. But our houses backed up to each other and there was like a bamboo forest in between.
Wow.
And one night I'm like at his place and he's like breaking up with me. And I'm like, I look at him and I'm like, this is a bad decision. There is no reason.
That is facts. She did say
that. I said, this is a bad decision. There's no reason for you to do this. And if you do this, I'm not going to be friends with you. I'm not going to talk to you. And
yes, Lauren, this is a great story. I am so glad I asked this question.
And then he's like sad. And I'm sad because I'm like, he's still doing this, you know. And we're both like 21. And so we walk out to he's kind of like walking me back, I guess, to like kiss me goodbye forever.
We're
in the middle of the bamboo forest in the dark. It's like probably like, I don't know, 1 a.m. or something. And I turned to leave and we'd been dating for a year and a half. Neither of us said, I don't think had we kissed at that point? I don't know. But we hadn't said I love you yet.
Okay. Yes, definitely not.
And I said, I love you quietly under my breath as I walked away. And then I didn't talk to him for the next month.
You heard this.
Oh, I didn't know if he heard me.
I said,
and I wasn't going to ask him.
I said goodbye. She said, I love you.
And turned around.
And I began to cry. and really didn't stop for about 2 months.
Man.
It was horrible.
Oh my God.
Yeah. This is what I shared a couple episodes ago.
The postal service just lights up in the background. It's like the soundtrack, you know?
No joke. I had so many. That record. I have a lot of memories.
Well, fast forward, and I shared about this a couple episodes ago. Mm-hmm. It was horrible. 2 months. I was depressed. I now realize, like, super anxious about my decision. The funny part is, we sort of got back together in the exact same spot in that bamboo forest because one night.
No, it was behind my house.
Exactly, because I was thinking about asking her out again because I like was having a horrible 2 months. But I just couldn't decide.
He's about to graduate. Decision. This is like March.
So I'm standing like at the edge of that forest, just looking at her house one night. Yes, it's as weird as it sounds. I'm just like,
well, it's kind of like his backyard, though. Like, it's not that far from your house.
That makes it sound a little bit more normal than it was.
Smoking.
Yeah, I was smoking a clothes cigarette.
Clothes were clean.
Yeah, this was like, I'm really dating myself.
So I pull up in my car from the library at like 2 a.m. because I'm a night owl. So
I've been
studying.
This one is truly my
perspective. Okay, all right. This is your story. Let me cook here. Okay, cook. We have a 13-year-old
son. I'm standing at the edge of the bamboo forest and I see headlights pulling into the driveway. And I'm like, it's 3 a.m. or something. Like, surely Lauren is already home. Who is this?
It was 1 a.m.
And then it was 1 a.m. That's that is true, actually. And then I was like, those are Lauren's headlights. And I'm like, I'm caught now. Like, she sees me. What? Like, this is going to be so awkward.
Yes.
And then.
It's a little say anything
moment. The car turns off and the interior lights come on. And my great friend, Rob, the aforementioned protector of her at the punk concert.
Oh, no.
Is in the passenger seat. And I'm like.
No big deal. I'm just giving a ride home from the library, guys.
What is going on? I'm processing
everyone's
this all in real
here.
Time.
Nothing's
and
happening.
And that is actually quickly what I come to. Like, there's no way. Like, no.
Yeah.
There's no,
no
way.
No, Rob is an amazing.
But then
yeah,
I realized they haven't seen me. So I can actually escape this. And then I remember, this is actually classic me in college. I thought of Augustine's.
Just that phrase.
Wait, the pizza story?
I thought of Augustine's, people paraphrase him saying, I'm actually not sure where it's written, love God and do what you want. Hmm. And I had like been like searching God for an answer. Like, should I ask Lauren out again?
Sure.
Or should I not?
Okay.
And God is not telling me what to do. And I remember thinking, it's a holy way of saying, go with your gut. Yeah. Like, what do you want to do?
Yeah, assuming all choices and are I good was and God like, honor.
I want, yeah. I don't yeah. know how, yeah, yes, yes. There's, yeah. yeah, obviously within moral boundaries that the Bible clearly lays out. But within that gray space that is so often true, like, who do Absolutely. I marry? This is like the growing up stuff we talked about. What do I do? Do I get back together with this girl? Do I ask this person out? Do I, you know, love God and do what you want? I suddenly realized, I don't know where this is going, but I know that I want to go somewhere with Lauren. I got to figure this out. And I step out of the bamboo forest and I was like, hey.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, one of the most startling moments of my life, Rob was immediately like, he like melted into the shadows. Well, he knew what was up. He was like.
Because we just look at each other and no one talks. And Rob goes, I think I'm going to go home.
I mean, because like we lived next to them. So I was given a ride home because he lived with Justin. So he lives in that house. Goodness. So, you know, I pull up into my back lot basically and Rob just is going to hop over to his house. So
okay. We got back together that night and here we are 19, 20 years later.
Yeah, Justin moved to China 3 months after that. I still had to graduate UVA. Yeah.
Wow. And now it's been almost, you've been married almost 19 years mm-hmm. and then together yeah. for 20 something, 21.
Together for, I guess, 22 years.
Yeah, yeah.
20.
And yeah, and four years. Boys. 21. That's and right. then now this is, there's been fruit from this union and
it's been a fruitful marriage. For, anyways.
Four boys. We've already had the sex episode. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, we can.
But four boys.
Lauren would be happy to correct everything that I said and we said.
Great. You
know, that'd be great. But I do think, I mean, what I want to highlight, and this is kind of the where I'm going with this, is you guys have four boys and they're boys. They're not like passive dudes. I mean, like we talked about.
You were there last night.
Yeah. Like there's a hole in the wall. There's excitement. There's pantsing. What a fun game. I forgot.
That's
yeah.
because
no,
Lauren,
that's a family rule. You can yeah. do it if I'm not there because it's an all male.
Is that
thing.
What happened? That's yeah. so.
Did you see how Lauren left the drop off wit and they all of a sudden started playing like pantsing?
Yeah, because like yeah. that's part of being a man. So is being funny and messing with your dudes, but you don't do it if it's ladies present. So wow. they get in. They transgress that and get in trouble.
Yes,
I do like how you turned to me at one point and you were like, "So is this normal?"
Did I say that?
You did.
Maybe that was like
you because you were like, "Oh my gosh, this energy!
The first time
like,
they
is this normal?"
Well, so yeah. no, the so because we have energy, but it's emotional energy.
Yeah.
So there's no wrestling
and verbal
and right, verbal, assume, and so yeah. it's like mm-hmm. this unique tension of like. Wordsmith and ability to say something in such a way that does not overtly get you in trouble, but it's enough to like just cut to the core of the other human where the words are being directed.
Wow.
Just like, wow, your toys are really dumb. I like stuff like this. There's no wrestling. Wow. No one's wrestling. Yeah. No one's physically touching. It's just psychologically dominating the other person. That's psychological warfare in my house.
That's intense.
So,
that's
yeah.
intense.
And we don't have anywhere near that kind of subtlety.
Yeah, no, yeah. And yeah. I think there's beauty in that. But what I wanted to talk about is, you know, you guys are raising four boys and they're becoming men actively. Witt's taller than you, right? He's in that middle stage of just like entering life and puberty and like all that stuff, you know, going to be in high school soon. He's in eighth grade, right?
Mm-hmm. You're yep. Yeah, stuff. Just started. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I wanted to just talk about that. How do you guys think together as a couple? And I want for the parents listening, for the fathers listening, you know, because this doesn't just happen with the fathers. You have a partner in this, right? We mm-hmm. all as fathers listening have a partner that complete this partnership in a way that is so important to help us. And so my question just really is what does it look like for you guys to raise boys to become men? What are some of the things you guys are doing as a couple together? Lauren, what are some of the things you're doing as a mom to really help move these, you know, boys to men, godly men? I think one of the things you said was actually, Lauren, was really helpful of just being like, hey, here's some basic stuff. Like, dudes are going to be dudes, but don't do it in front. Like, here's the line of where I don't want to see everything, yeah. right? So, I mean, that's very practical and funny, but I think like that stretched out over spirituality and emotions. Like, there's a lot of intentionality that you guys have. So,
I'll just say, first. Like, talking to dads, I get regularly sought out by mom of all boys because sure. they are so just overwhelmed and underwater and confused.
Yeah.
But I think to men out there who have sons, especially yeah. if you only have sons, because it's particularly, you know, amped up when you have an all male household.
Yeah.
You need to help your wife decode like boys, because I just
decode.
Understand. It's just not the same, especially like boy to boy expressions of affirmation of love are going to look like ribbing, are going to look like physical contact. And was like really hard for me. For example, illustrative example from like, I don't know, 8 years ago, we have four boys at this point. They're probably like 8 to 2 or something.
Okay.
I am just so fed up of every time someone walks by their brother, they shoulder them. And there's just so much physical fighting. And Justin was like, Lauren, that's not a fight you need to pick. Every time I walk by my dude, my best friends, I'm going to bump them. And he was like, that's not a thing you need to address. That's not an unkindness. They receive physical, like they love you so much, they want to kill you, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. And I was like,
I just want to consume you. I love you so much.
Well, they, women have that about babies. Yes. You know, women will be like, oh, I just want you eat you all up. Well, boys are like, to me, they would like, my boys are just really expressive physically. All my toddler boys slap me in the face, punch me in the face, because they love me so much. You know, so like, but like.
Like just, mommy doesn't like this.
And I think like the wrestling and all this like science is coming out that the more dads are physical with their boys, well, all their children, you know, lifting up the girls too or whatever, but up to a high age, like.
Yeah.
And Justin's like, I had to adopt that as a mom of all boys of like, we got a trampoline because I was like, I'm not fighting in the house with you.
Oh,
but I will get on the trampoline when Papa's gone for a couple of days and all. Or like instead of like, I'm just like losing my cool because they're like fighting. Yeah. My punishment is like tickle war in the trampoline. And that like resets them. And then they can, like I had to learn from him that like coming at them sideways through physicality. And like, I do not speak the language of physicality. Yeah. I'm a female. Yes.
Yeah.
I wasted hundreds of thousands of words in the first 5 years of my parenting. Because they don't hear me. They're little. Their rational brains aren't online starting until age 2.
Yeah.
And Justin just intuited that because like also like it's helped our marriage because the more I learn about like boy development from people like David Thomas, shout out, Raising Boys and Morals podcast, I realized like I can, a little girl even who's 7 can keep a list of verbal commands in her head that I tell her. But even my husband cannot do that.
Can I give you a high five real quick, Justin? Because
it's wiring. But if I give him a visual list, he's on
it. So this is where I need to tell Elizabeth, could you please turn off this episode? Please do not listen. Actually, Elizabeth and I share note apps. So
that's what we do too.
So literally I get a text that is a shared note and it's Brooke's list. Literally, it's just that. And I'm always telling her like, it does help. I'm like, oh yeah, just go through the list.
This is why in retrospect, I see my mom was so wise. She must have learned this at some point. Because she would always tell me, you're going to go do this thing, like maybe take out the trash, and then you're going to come back and you're going to say, what's next? Because you know, if she told me 3 or 4 things, it's like, I have no hope, you know? So she learned to be kind. Just the thing is, you're going to come back to me and say, what's next?
Well, and I think that's helped me a lot because especially our oldest is super high, like executive functioning for a boy, especially, but he'll tell me, he's like, mom, I zoned out. I can't. Can you just write it for me?
Yeah.
You know, he cannot, but he's willing to be faithful and do the things. It's just been good to remember like our wiring is different. And so to the men out there, like you need to help your wives understand that that's a design. That's not a flaw.
That's good.
Yeah, that you need to adapt accordingly. And a lot of the way our society is set up with little kids, especially, is very female dominated. Mm-hmm. Just not in a bad way. Women are super nurturing and caring, but it's all about like, we're going to tell you what to do. Well, work.
Yeah.
But if I show them what to do or I give them something that's like, here's the trash, tangible. Take it out, like they can handle it. So,
really good.
Fathers, we are so excited to let you know of two resources that myself and Justin have been working on. First, Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth, is available exclusively right now at intentionalparents.org or intentionalfatherhood.org. It is a 31-day guide to help you pray and focus with consistency on your family, your children, helping shape their hearts while God shapes yours. And of course, you've heard about it. Justin's resource, his new book, The Body Teaches the Soul, is available everywhere books are sold. This book is about the 10 essential habits that build a healthy and holy life, habits that strengthen how you lead your home. So we want to just encourage you, if you have not grabbed those resources and those are helpful, please take a moment, get those now, and let's get back to today's episode.
I want to just zone in on something you said. He said, I wasted hundreds of thousands of words in the first space, you know, younger
zero
years.
Zero to
which
five.
Is impressive yeah. in and of itself, if you think about that, that output word. Of words.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I had a zero to 5 year old for like 8 years. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, and I just yeah. The only thing I wanted to zone in on that is, I know that you were kind of just saying that as a passing phrase, but I think there's a lot of wisdom in what you are highlighting, which is we often pick the wrong tool for the job at hand.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I think true. That the wisdom yeah. that you're saying right there is like learning who your kids are and going like, I have all boys. We got to pick a whole different metric, even if that's not natural to how you would like to do it, right? And I think yeah. that's the real lesson, like for all of us, because as a dad to girls, I have the language, like I have to.
Yeah, you got to brush up. Yeah,
it's a
yeah.
whole different way, and it's really like whether it's natural to me or not is not the point. The point is really like how do I serve them best? And so that was just bubbling to the surface as we're talking about this process. You know, you guys are in a big space, and with four boys. With the energy that they have, and you guys are both very thoughtful and intentional parents, obviously, it's very clear. At the same time, that amount of children with responsibilities in life, no matter how mild and if you do just the basic things of just keeping people alive, that is so exhausting in everything that you do. And I know this, we know this, we're on the same mm-hmm. stage. At the same time, you guys both do a lot. And so outside of just the family life. And so I wanted to just kind of ask and move to the question of like, For you guys, how do you encourage each other in friendships and or how do you help each other with this load? Because I think for all the fathers listening and mothers especially, but I would love to hear first from you, Lauren, what is the most helpful thing that Justin as a father does for you to like release you into feeling like a mom, a woman, a wife, a spouse, mm-hmm. a partner? What are some of those things that he can actively do that actually help you with that? And the reason I'm asking it that way is because I think there's a lot of things that as men, we think we're doing that is helpful, but it's not actually helpful. So yeah. I'd just love to hear from the female perspective. Like what are those things? I know I'm putting you on the spot.
I think this is partly particular to my personality in the way he does it, but I think he has really fought for me to have time alone and time away.
Yes.
Especially because of like the four boys kind of back to back, just like,
yes.
The breastfeeding years, it's just so hard for a woman to have any time to herself.
Yes.
If that's your particular story, and he would kind of be mean sometimes because I would be so overwhelmed. I couldn't even like think
like you wouldn't accept it, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I'm not someone who's scared to leave my kids alone with a babysitter. And I know that's like something some women have to get over. And I'm not, you know, Justin always was like taking care of them. It was just like I would go do something else. I would be resetting the house. I would be running errands, you know. So he just sometimes was kind of like, no, you need to go. I can see this has been a hard day. And I would be like, but we still need to do this X, Y, Z. I need to tell you all these things. And school, you know, the homework hasn't been done. And he would be like, you need to trust me with it and you need to leave. And like, I take confrontation pretty well. I am a pretty direct person. So that I don't think the way he said it is prescriptive to all relationships. But the way that your wife needs to be encouraged is for you to show her that you got this and like, not that you're gonna, like, and that requires a level of buy-in to what the baseline expectations for running things while she's gone are. Yeah. And I would say like, that took us a while to come to terms with, like we had to come to a common set of, this is the low bar that's acceptable and it's higher than his and it's lower than mine.
That's it.
And we both, and like that might not be true. It varies on the issue, you know, like, but like if, the wife, especially in the baby years, because she's going to be the one who's like, that's in her head about like, you missed a nap. That means he's not going to sleep for me tomorrow. You know, like if that's a low bar, then you need to rise to that occasion. Sometimes he pushes back and he's like, they did 18 minutes of reading, not 25, whatever. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. Like you made the effort, but like.
Yeah. Higher than mine, lower than yours.
Yeah,
it's
just, we had to come and it took like 4 years of hashing out. Like for me, cleaning the kitchen includes wiping down the surfaces. Like.
I did it last night. I promise.
They were amazing. It's not that he leaves them out on purpose. He's just really focused on the pots and the sink. And I had to be like, those are easy for me to get to tomorrow. But if we wake up and there's honey on the island when I'm signing the homework sheet, I will lose my mind. You know, like I had to be like, this is more important to me. So if I'm going out and I come back and the counters are like a disaster, I know you just don't see it. You don't. Yeah. It's not something. It's not like you're leaving it on purpose to spite me. But like this is a low bar. That took years and like he had to be trained in the habit of seeing it. And it's like, I had to have like it was like 3 to 4 hard years of hashing out like what are, and like my expectations had to drop of what a low bar was, had to go so far down because I'm a perfectionist and 4 boys and like their house is just a disaster all the time. And I had to be like, we can't. Like we didn't mow our yard for like 2 years because we were like, there's too many other things going on.
Wow.
Like we just couldn't. Yeah. It was just like sometimes
that
like
was, you're that gonna, was my bar going down.
Yeah.
Like, the lawn
like
is
sometimes it was like we just can't until we can afford a lawn service, we're just gonna have weeds. Like it's just yeah. you know, and yeah. it's not I feel like there's a false narrative that you can be faithful to all like not faithful. You can be faithful to everything you're called to, but you can't have the ideal to what is in your head. Yeah, all your
it's not necessarily successful in
yeah,
the ways that you
and
expect it.
Like, yeah, that's true for if you're a working parent. And when I was full time working and we had 2 babies, I felt like I could only give it 80% of my job and 80% at home, and that was really hard. And so I, you know, if you're a wife hearing this and you're a stay at home parent, that is a really hard struggle too, because like I don't think the stay at home parent who hasn't worked outside the home realizes how hard that is to code switch and to be like, well, I'm not giving it my all at work either.
Yeah. Yo, absolutely. Yeah.
You're, so that I had to like grow an empathy for that struggle while at the same time, like I worked full time until our second was born. And then I transitioned to part time and kind of like realizing like
so
being at home also feels like that, that you could never complete a task or finish things. So
yeah. I am often talking to moms and dads about this at conferences or events. Lots of people ask about, you know, how to help your wife or help your husband get out of the house.
Yeah.
I think you put it really well. I just would speak specifically to the fathers that many of us see that our wives need to have personal space. They need to have friendship.
Yeah.
They need to have time off. And a lot of guys will be like, I can't get her to accept
leave.
It.
Yeah.
And it's like, you put it really well. Like you need to lower the bar to actually accept the gift. But the message to the dads is like, you need to work as hard as you can
to hire them,
to make her feel like, wow, actually, I guess, I guess I can leave. I guess I can trust you with this. And on the other side, you know, Lauren talking to the moms is like, you need to lower the expectations because you need to get out of the house. But so, you know, you got to talk to both.
And I mean, I feel like the notes app is a good practical tip. It's like, well, I can't download my head to him in the kitchen when the kids are around. He'll be like, I can't remember any of that.
Yeah.
But if I take 5 minutes to go get ready, and I'm in our room and I sit down and I write an either, you know, a paper note or like a notes app. And I'm like, these are the absolute must haves. These are my 10 nice to haves. Of course, he never gets to the nice to haves. And I'm like, I would have done that, but whatever. Like I've laid it out and he's like very clear.
You got that message, right? Did you catch that?
You know, cause he's always like, he told me this recently. He's like, but I'm like, these are our priorities. He's like, everything is a priority to you. Like you can't give me like 25 things and be
so
like, we have
priorities.
To do all of these things.
So this is so interesting because if Elizabeth was here, she would very much be like, yes, yes, yes. And I cannot tell you how similar you and Elizabeth are in this arena specifically. But it's a very challenging thing because it's a burden to be able to see how good everything could be, but not to attain it. And the burden that I think it's a burden sometimes. I don't think it's always a gift. Like I can't always see how good things could be. So I'm kind of like blissfully happy. Like, I don't know. How could how could
pretty great here.
I'm pretty okay with
in this. Alley next to the dumpster.
It's not that bad.
Really nice.
I'm just thankful for what I do have. I don't know what I don't have. And that's not moral or more godly. I think, but just to the wiring piece, what I hear you guys saying, and just to maybe highlight the principle you're just saying so beautifully, is like figure out your spouse. What do they need?
Yeah, that's
and then,
good.
But with that, and this is tricky because you guys know this better than anybody, because even though we're all really well-meaning in our marriages, at least hopefully if you're a good-hearted, you know, person who loves Jesus, you're going to want to like do good to your spouse. You want to give them space. But we often, and I would say this is probably mostly subconsciously, although it gets to the verbal level, is we keep score. And I would love to hear what your guys' thoughts are on that, because it's very easy to be like, I'm going to give her a night away. But man, I had to force her to do it. And then I got to do all this work. And like, it's just fraught with the idea of bitterness or frustration if you don't have the right perspective or heart or understanding. So how do you guys, what does that look like for you guys?
This was
this is tough.
Yeah. We hit around year 9 or 10 of our marriage. We hit our hardest patch and it lasted, you know, 3 years. A really wise woman from older sister in Christ from my church, who's about 15 years ahead of us, met with me at that time. She's like, how long have you been married? It's like almost 10 years. She's like, you're right on time. And it was such helpful.
Oh, whoa.
Expectation setting for like when you've been married for a while and you're usually around 10 years, you have peak sort of demands on you with job, career, and children. The major struggle was we were both completely underwater. It was when we found out we were pregnant with our fourth. That was a surprise. Our two youngest are 18 months apart. So it's two babies.
I didn't realize they were that close.
Two babies at one time.
Yeah. Yeah, there's little two.
I have a lot of physical challenges with my pregnancies. So, and then like I had three active boys while I was pregnant. He had left a law firm to start his own practice. So he's running his own business, you know, and then COVID hits and then I have to pandemic homeschool. So it was a really rough 2 years. I mean, for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But specifically with that timing. And I think the hardest thing for us to, and like the lie from Satan and just the bitterness of this is the hardest time in my life and he is not supporting me. But he felt exactly the same way. And there are times in your marriage where you are both going to be, it is such a hard time at the same time and you can't go above and beyond to support the other one. And you have to fight with your whole being that root of bitterness that keeps the score and says, but I did this and he didn't do that.
Yeah.
And you, I've realized like it took like 3 years for the Lord to flip that in my head to, it's never going to be equal. It's always going to feel like I'm doing more.
Yeah.
It's always going to feel like I'm doing more, but it always feels like that to him too. And if that's your paradigm where you're both like, I'm going to go the extra mile, I'm always going to feel like it's a little bit, I'm doing more, but you don't hold it against the other, then that's where God's like magic gospel of like, it's better to give than receive.
Yeah.
Then it starts to change into like, I really love him, so I'm going to do this.
Wow.
You know, and that's I think he modeled it first because he was kind of like, that was kind of around the time of the same like fight about like, what is the low bar?
Yeah.
And he like kind of upped first.
Okay.
And was like, everything in my life was so hard though, because I was like, I felt horrible all the time.
Yeah.
So it was just like my low bar was just like, I couldn't go any lower.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He went lower, you know, he went higher first.
Yeah.
And that helped.
Jump in for a second to note the messy reality of this. We fought about this stuff for a good couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like really hard fights.
So, yeah.
Because exactly what you said, I'll just say my version of it, and I think the male version of it that probably a lot of dads are experiencing. Like we grow up against the backdrop of a generation who didn't seem super involved with the nitty-gritty, like you know, dads who didn't know how to change diapers or pack lunches, and moms who were doing it all, and we're like, no, we're gonna know how to do that stuff, you know. We want to help our wives, we want to be involved. Some of them wanted to work outside the house, we want to enable some of that, and so we're learning all this stuff only to realize, wait, I'm also building my own career. I'm helping raise the kids. I'm a very present father. And apparently it's still not to her liking. Like it's I'm still not living up. There's still more I could do. But she says this is still just a low bar. And so, right, I'm giving my version.
Yeah.
And so I can sit there like doing the dishes at night and thinking, I'm doing everything and it's still not enough. And why don't people help me? And I have to work a job and then I have to come home and work another job. And then I don't get enough of sleep. And people are always asking. And of course, in her head, she's like, people are hanging on me all day and I never get off and I never get away
and
from the kids.
I feel bad and I don't have any time to plan to myself or even have an adult conversation for 10 minutes.
And my version of keeping score.
And everyone was sick. We got the stomach virus six times in 1 year. So and it was just, it was a really bad year.
My version of keeping score is nursing that narrative.
Yeah.
Nursing that narrative of no one helps me, I do it all. And I think maturity in our second 10 years of marriage, that really I feel like it's been the last five where we've gotten a little better about this. So around year 15 maybe, is letting that go by saying, you literally can't just like, I don't know, with what hands do you drop an idol of the heart? I don't know, right?
Yeah.
Here's what you can do. You can embrace a new love by meditating on and replacing that self-talk with, look at all that Christ has done for me. I haven't done a fraction for this family of what Christ has done for the family of God. I still haven't given up my life. I still haven't surrendered at all. I've still got more to give. Apparently I can die a little more.
Yeah.
And thinking about that, this is why we've spent so much of this season talking about giving your life away. This is the season where you learn over and over and over, you're not dead yet. You haven't given it away enough.
You're still there.
And I think that's helped reframe I'm doing more, which both of us are thinking, to how can I make her even happier? How can I serve her even more? Because honestly, my happiness is bound up in hers. I'm not going to be happy by her finally saying, you know what? you do more. Thank you. Like, no, Ed is going to nurse the worst parts of me and is going to ruin everything. But when we both say, thank you for what you're doing. I see your work. Thank you. Mm. And I want to help you too. Then we're acting like Christ to each other.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I've read Sacred Fire, the Rollheiser book, and loved it. And just the paradigm shift in early parenthood, I think from 0 to 10 is, wait, when is this going to end? It's so hard. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I thought there was nothing left for me to give, and yet someone just threw up or something.
Yeah.
or like I'm pregnant again or something. Yeah. And I think it's the both maturity in your marriage to realize like that existential angst of like, I am being asked to do something that is beyond me is a spiritual crisis. And like, we had to embrace the spiritual practice of lament.
Yes. Yes.
And like, instead of like, good. For me, it was like, I'm so angry at God, but I was like, I'm just going to be mad about Justin not doing this. Because that felt more active.
Oh.
And so I had to be like, God is big enough for my emotions. And also, Jesus desperately wants to help me in every little thing. Like, if I could actually like just be like, and Justin does too. And so if I'm like, okay, I'm praying because someone just threw up again and I cannot believe we have the stomach bug again. I text the girls chain. Someone drops off a green juice for me from like my favorite place. It's like $13, you know? And it's like God met me.
Of course.
Someone random stopped by with like a special treat. And then later I'm like, you know, Dustin, this is really hard. And it like, those are the things of like, if you go to the Lord in your need, instead of being bitter and angry at your spouse, you know, it's just that, it's that turn of like, and that's actually what God has for us. He wants to build us into people who can give our life away. And that only happens through tearing our idols down.
And I would say a skill in marriage is learning how to kindly and gently say to your spouse, this is a true art. Like, I still haven't figured it out. Be able to say, I think you're mad at God, but you're yelling at me.
Or circumstances. Yeah. Yeah.
I think you're mad at circumstances, which is to be mad at God, but you're yelling at me. Can I encourage you to work it out with him? You know?
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. I've never figured out how to say that.
Well,
right.
I was going to say, it depends. I think it's just the timing of which you say that. Cause I'm thinking in the middle of an argument.
Yeah.
If you're in the middle, like it's like, no, you're the problem.
Yeah. And we all do this, right?
And like, know your wife's cycle. Don't pick the worst time to have that conversation. Like, seriously.
You should elaborate a little.
Yeah. I mean, there's like, it's different for every woman, but there's going to be 3 to 5 days where her emotions are not in her control. So don't pick those to have the fight. And if you don't know it, figure it out.
This was a huge revelation when Lauren started sharing, we started using a shared calendar. And then she was like, I think at one point, didn't I ask? I was like, can you put your monthly cycle on it so I can see?
No, I shared it with you. And I was like, and then I had a calendar for myself. And then I was like, and then I put the like 5 days before, which is when like I have like extreme self-criticism and like crazy rage for 2 days.
Yeah.
That was a recurring calendar hold.
Really helped me.
Like, so he could know.
That is
like,
great practical.
It was super helpful wise. Practical. Because if you don't know
what
her body's experiencing, this can be said back and forth for the both, but for the husbands, if you don't know what her body and mind are experiencing, it's super easy to be judgmental and not empathetic. But when I was like, oh, I know this season. I know this. This is that couple days where I might take some heat, but I can really show some love by not taking it personally.
And
And,
you know, good training for parenting.
Oh,
because that's like classic, you know, adolescent. It's like they're going to be like all over the map, boys and girls. And you have to be like, don't take it personal.
I'm in that space right now, and it's real. It's like the real emotions. But you know, the thing I want to just, you know, press into it just a tiny bit more is how often we end up taking out our anger, our frustration, our sadness on our spouse because they're safe.
Yeah,
our safest people are those who we are so quick to be honestly the most raw, vulnerable, and honestly, honestly, like take out a lot of our frustration with. Because we know that we're still loved even in spite of that. That doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it good. It doesn't make it even healthy. I think also, though, I just want to say it's very normal. It's a very normal thing to be like, well, you know, you're the safest person. I mean, we're not always conscious about it.
Yeah.
I do think, though, what you had said is just so important, how we can just become aware. Like, we've been talking a lot this season about naming things and naming the fact like, oh, just becoming aware, like, am I angry at God or am I really angry at where this is at? And for a while, until you can kind of untangle that, it probably feels like both. You know, it probably feels very much
and
like.
And sometimes both are happening.
Well, and we both had to change and grow and be better at being parents and supporting one another. I mean, that's the case, though, for pushing your spouse to friendship right there.
Yeah.
Because if you're not talking, if you're angry, if your life circumstances are super hard, and anyone who has, like, you know, their oldest is like 9, you're like drowning probably.
Yeah.
And you and your spouse are in that season of like, this is like, I'm doing my best. I'm going over the top and you are too. We both feel unsupported. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's a pretty common experience. Like if you're not making time for friendship, however like little that could be, but like just some anchor of like talking to a friend about it is going to alleviate the burden so much, especially a friend who'll be like sympathetic and like, hear that, but you know, you're not going to vent to, you're not going to attack them.
Yeah.
So it's like gives your, for me, it gives me a space to process and realize I'm actually like, I need to lament to God. I need to pray. I need to be angry and like let that emotion go.
There have been so many fights that we haven't been able to solve, but a conversation with a female friend have just really moved forward.
Yeah.
And like, absolutely. And likewise for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's really good to have a conversation with someone who's just on your side. You know, and they're for your marriage usually too. So they're not like browbeating your husband, but they're like, so, wow, that's so hard for you.
Let's get into this really quick. Cause I think there's a lot of probably questions arising and I'll just try to get into the head of some of the fathers and listening like, okay, what is too much to share about? I want to ask this first question. What is too much to share about your spouse? Because like you're using a great example. You're talking about like, well, this thing's happening in our marriage and is there a line? Like, and I'm asking, I don't know if there needs to be, but where is there a line? Should there be a line? Where is it? And I'm asking because I think we need a good model of what this looks like, because some might automatically lean to overshare and some might lean to protect. And I don't think either are the point. I don't think either are good. I think there's probably a healthy middle.
I think you over, you share a little more than you would like with one or two people and share a little less with everybody else. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the line because if you're not going deep with at least one other person,
you can be honest, you have a
trusted friendship with, and it must be for wives, especially it must be someone who's not prone, or I guess for husbands too, who's not prone, who's for your spouse too, who's for your marriage.
It has to be someone
who's for your marriage's health and can take the bad news without judging the other person.
So
but I feel like it would be dangerous to not tell.
I like your a couple people share more than you're comfortable with and most everybody else less. I was actually only hearing that question in terms of closest friends. So I'm just answering in terms of my two closest friends, Matt and Steve, with whom we really basically share everything in our life.
Like,
from finances to internet history to fights in marriage, everything. I don't really have a line of like, oh, that's too much to share. Because I think when we share the most specific stuff in our life, we're actually sharing about our own struggles. But when we do share about our marriage struggles and fights.
I wonder if that's because Matt and Steve know me so well, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, we really
Matt went to college with us, so we had a friendship before.
Totally.
Justin and I were married, you know, so like I've known them for 20 years too.
I would actually say I so appreciate those guys. I actually think it's harder for the people who know you like that to actually still be for you. It's easy for somebody who doesn't know you, I think, to be like, well, she might mean this. I think it's been so helpful, and this is a gift. It's a blessing. You can work at cultivating the blessing, but it is a blessing to have friends that are so close that they know your wife, they know you, and you can basically talk about everything, and they'll be for both of you, and they'll hear it all out. So I think we have been kept safe by relationships like that, and a lot of our victories over fights in marriage have been won through the body of Christ and having friends. And so it's like you have to cultivate that intimate, vulnerable community to live in. You're doing that upstream work of friendship so that you can have that downstream effect of, oh, that saved us from a really tough season, or that saved us from drifting apart. And I tell parents this all the time because like they want to buy books on how to parent, but they want to defer thinking about friendship. I'm like, it's the first thing you lose when you start parenting, but it's the first thing that you need for your kids and for your marriage. So cultivating those deep relationships.
And I feel like a lot of people are like, I'm going to go talk to a therapist maybe first. And I actually think if you haven't tried a deep friend or you don't have a friend, like cultivating that friendship first. I'm not against therapy, but I do think there's a lot of benefit. Or like I mentioned my older friend, sister in Christ from our church. I didn't wait for a marriage ministry, a mentoring ministry for to come find me. I like texted her in desperation, was like, can we meet? I'm having a hard time.
Yeah.
Turns out most older saints are like happy to, you know, and are a little more flexible because she's an empty nester.
Yeah.
Come to my house while I'm folding laundry and give me incredible wisdom and perspective on marriage because she's been married already at that point for 25 years.
Isn't she the same one that told you to take your anger to God? He's big enough to take it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. She was that person.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that advice. Yeah.
I'm thinking of the couple where one of the spouses, because before I ask this question, one caveat, couldn't agree more with what you just said about the fact that your friends know you is helpful. My dearest friend, Ben, he's known Elizabeth. He's known me since we were 13. He's been along the whole process. He was best man at my wedding. He has known her almost as long as he's known me. So I think that's a very important thing. And when I am honest with him about our struggles, where she's fall short, where I fall short, he's able, he never takes sides. He listens objectively. And he's like, yeah, you're an idiot. Or, yeah, she's probably feeling a lot from this. Like, but it's never, it's never taking sides. It's always objective, kind, wise, you know, loving wisdom. So I think that's important. For the couple that's maybe younger, you know, we got a lot of young dads listening. They're having kids for the first time. And they're like, I really want this community. I want to share all this stuff with these dudes who are maybe new to life. And I want to tell them how my wife's just being so dumb about this stuff. You know, like maybe that's your narrative. Because you're having some frustration. You're like, okay, this is my time. And then the wife, you know, maybe is feeling like, I don't want you sharing everything about our marriage with these guys. What do we say to those people? Because I agree what you're talking about absolutely needs to happen. But we have to also agree that that probably takes time. So what do we say? Maybe what is the encouragement to get you from a place of like away, like against your husband sharing that idea or like real life and some of those dynamics with friends? How do we get from like against it to like warming up to it for it?
What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I think I relate to this more because when we moved to Richmond, I didn't have any good friends here. Justin did. He had like lifelong friends who, you know, I knew some, but it was mostly all the dudes.
Yeah.
So I've now, you know, I got to know their wives, and over the past 10 years, some of them have become some of my best friends. Okay. And, I mean, I think this is like definitely true of like play dates, like meeting up the playground. Yeah. Like if you're in a really desperate spot, you do need to kind of put a filter on. You don't want to accidentally end up like oversharing and like slamming your husband and regretting what you said in front of people that you've only hung out with like six times in a small group. So, I mean, if you're in that place where you're like, I just, you know, you need to make time for one-on-one hangout with someone and take a risk and take that next step. So like, I think to that young dad, it's like, well, don't share it in the group setting.
Yeah.
Like start to cultivate a coffee, like
get a
beer or get coffee with one guy and start to build up to that. And if you find yourself like me, I'm a verbal processor, so I'm more prone to be like, oh my gosh, this happened this morning and I'm so upset from the fight last night. Like then you need to like,
he's hard to be around. I know. I've been around for days. It's a lot.
Yeah. You need to like,
I'm a bit much. I'm a bit much.
I mean, I'm not a lot too.
Not even.
We're a bit much.
Yeah. You gotta know that about yourself and like make it a priority and build some time in and get up earlier, stay open. I mean, I would, you know, when I was having a really rough time, I was just like, I was asking people to stay out later and I was shorting my sleep because I was like, I need to talk about some stuff and take that next step with one or two people. And it may, you know, trying to fight the temptation to trash someone is important. And if you set that tone, that newer friend is probably going to respect that boundary.
Oh, yes.
You're like, I'm really angry and I'm struggling and these are why. If you preface it that way, you're not going to be like, he is doing that, you know.
I want to chime in here because actually this is not a distinction that I think and talk about enough, but I think you're making a really, really important one. One of the best pieces of advice I ever got on marriage was my mom talking to us right before we got married.
When we were engaged.
She said, I've made a commitment never to speak badly about your father in public.
Wow.
Or to a friend.
And vice versa.
Yeah, yeah.
And by that, she means you speak well of your spouse around other people and sort of, you were saying that playground setting or that conversational setting, yeah, that casual setting.
Or even in a friend setting, you know, you have to have the maturity to be like, he's doing this thing that is really hard for me and I think he's wrong.
Yeah.
But that's still, not speaking badly of them.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. There's two different settings.
Yeah.
So, yes. I loved my mom's advice of, I speak well of my spouse in public.
Yeah.
Now, there are private conversations with close friends that I have in mind when I'm talking about most of what I talked about for the past, what we've talked about for the past 10 minutes. I'm talking about vulnerable friendships where you are practicing the gospel wisdom that you can be fully known and fully loved at the same time, faults and all.
Yeah, it might take a while to build up to that, but you can start.
So
yeah.
There is a space there where I can still speak well of Lauren. And I actually think it's really important, even when I'm sharing our toughest fights, I am not trying to speak ill of her.
No.
I am trying to be honest with my friends about what we are struggling with. And that certainly comes with telling actual facts with what we're struggling with.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But that's not speaking ill of her and saying, like, I'm not saying, can you believe that she said this to me? Yeah. Can you believe that she
almost
did this?
Almost like taking sides.
I'm
yeah.
saying, yeah. we are really struggling. She's saying this and she did that. And I'm saying this and I did that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think every couple needs to be okay with that sort of honesty about their marriage with other close friends. But I think every couple needs to be so vigilant that you speak well of your spouse in public. And these things can be true at the same time.
I think that's true for our kids too.
I think that's
a big temptation to
say more.
Oh my gosh. Like,
yeah, this is a big deal.
When they're toddlers, they don't understand, but it happens sooner than you think. You're like, I mean, I've been guilty of this and have had to repent and get better at it. Of like, they are making my life miserable. They're doing these things. They're over there punching. I can't believe how mad they are. And just and there's a difference in tone when I'm like, it's really hard for me. You know, it turns out they need a parent. That's why God gave them to me. It's really hard to, they're like, really, you know, I'm having a really hard time because they're being so bad. Or like, it's just the tone shift. And it's like, if you're in a group with other parents, it can be easy for it to turn into a complaint fest.
I was just complaining out loud about your kids to other people is really damaging to your kids.
Yeah.
Well, and it says something about you as a parent. You just said it. It turns out they need a parent.
Yes.
That's their children.
Yeah.
And it's like when we are trashing our kids or complaining about them in that way, it shows that we've forgotten something fundamental about who we are. And that is that's why God put us here. To care for these children, like that is your glory and your gift that you get to shepherd these fools. Like they, like us, are broken sinners in need of great help. And that's what you're here for. And I think complaining about them is, it suggests that we've forgotten that. Being honest about our struggles suggests that we're trying to figure out how to do that well.
Yes.
And really like that goes to like diagnoses. Like I just feel like that we need to be a little bit more careful about the way we talk publicly about our kids as a culture right now. Because I feel like we're not doing them any favors with labels. I mean, there are private conversations there and there's like, you know, groups of any size. And like the Bible calls us to be really careful with our words because they have power. And I think we need to be careful about how does God see this child and what is their potential? And in private settings, honest with the struggles. And I, for me as a verbal processor, I think this looks like both as it relates to like hard marriage dynamics, but like hard parenting things is like kind of like having the space to come around to that with a one-on-one conversation or a one-on-two with trusted friends, with girlfriends who I've built that rapport with is like venting in a way, but they know I'm going to come around and be like, and it wouldn't it be great if God changed my circumstances, but that's not what I'm called to. I'm called to like trust in Christ in the hard part of these circumstances. And can you believe the circumstance? You know, and it's like,
sounds
I'm going
like you're
around.
Processing in real time.
Yeah.
Right now.
And
me too.
It like, it's really helpful though, to like have that safety to be raw with somebody, but they know I'm going to come around to, and I'm not going to trash them in front of the pickup line.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be like this. And a lot of times I feel like I give other moms freedom when I'm like, vulnerable, like they're like, I'm having a hard time with his aggression. And I'm like, well, this thing, but I don't use the name.
Yeah.
This thing one happened with my child. And it's like, there are moments you can do it. And like leaving out their names, if you have more than two children is very, or you have two or more, it's like helpful. Cause then you can share like a particular story that's without so kind of throwing them under the bus. Yes. So
do you remember that scene in Moonrise Kingdom where I can't quite remember, but it's like one of the characters is having a flashback to his house, I think, or he comes back to visit his parents and he finds like the book they have, like how to deal with a difficult child.
It's the girl. Right?
Yeah, it's the girl. Yeah. I think about that often because I'm like, I want to help my children by being honest about the struggles we have with other people. Mm. But I never want them to feel like they've walked into a room and found a book that I like have like how to deal with a difficult child, like as if they're like, oh, damn, is there something wrong with me that everybody else knows that I don't know? This is, again, art, not science. But I think we're trying to serve our kids well to help them know that more than not, they're in the boat that we are in together, broken sinners in need of a savior. And we're trying to be that as a parent, but we're also trying to let them know that just like we're broken and wholly loved, they are broken and wholly loved. They are not the strange, difficult child that needs expert help nearly so much as they are the beautiful human being that is dearly loved by their mom and dad and dearly loved by God.
And this is a key distinction between, you know, sometimes you need to tell a child something, you know, in a private conversation, but that's different even than in front of their siblings.
Well, and a lot of this, you know, a lot of this conversation, obviously we're diving in of marriage and parenting because it's just our world, but I want to end because we could talk all day. I mean, really, and we actually do a lot of the time. So I mean, I know we could really truly go all day, but I have two questions for you guys and I want each of you to answer. Okay. And
you go first.
They're simple, but I also think just to give some encouragement and to give some perspective, because I think sometimes there's assumptions we have within these questions, but I want to ask whoever wants to go first, what is your favorite thing or one or two favorite things about your marriage?
I actually want you to go first.
Okay. Actually, I want to go first. I didn't think I did. I love the romance of the mind with Lauren. I love that Lauren is a fiercely intelligent, like a enormous reader, and someone I can talk to about anything and everything.
Yes.
She's going to have incredible feedback. And I don't know. This is like, you asked me what I love. This is not prescriptive. Yes. I just love that we have a rich conversation and reading tradition, because there's so much else in marriage that is wonderful. Like, I love our emotional intimacy. We talked about all these.
I was just going to say, this is intelligent. Yeah. This is
there's so many things. Like I'm so grateful for our sex life. I'm so grateful for our emotional intimacy. I'm so grateful for our spiritual intimacy. Mm. But one of the things that I just particularly enjoy and love is that we both read and think and talk and dream together.
Yeah.
And that happens in all areas of life. So it's one of my favorite
things. That's great.
Did you say we could say two?
So whatever you want. He said
two questions. I have two questions.
I just know if I was allowed to keep going or if it's supposed to be one thing.
I think because we want to honor Lauren's perspective. You want to do another one? Do another one quickly.
Well, the second thing I love is I just love how hard she works at being a mom.
Yeah.
Because I think she'll be the first to admit that she wasn't the kind of mom that was like, I can't wait to have kids. I'm going to be so natural at this. And then on top of that, she got all boys. And then on top of that, she got very boy boys. And then on top of that, when you put them all against each other, it's like a frat house really quick. And so she's just constantly been on the back of her heels. And then there's birth injuries and there's all these things that made it just, you know, very like, you don't feel like you're cut out for the task that the Lord gave you. And yet you have worked so hard at, like, she's such a fighter in that sense,
really cool.
To figure out how to.
Thanks, babe.
Yeah, I mean it. And I like that you fight openly and honestly. Like, we talk, as you've heard in this conversation, like, some of this is like, we're processing in real time. Like, do they have it together? No,
no,
we don't. And that's
welcome
what, like,
to the club.
That's why I love Lauren, is she's not going to lie about, and she's not going to let me lie.
Even if she likes coffee or not.
All my books. And is like, that story is, that's not quite how it happened. Or she's like, that you're not, you know, and I think that I'm telling the truth, to be clear.
Yeah.
But she'll be like, no, it was rougher than that.
Yeah,
you know,
you're not how it will say. It's usually not as rough as you put it.
Exactly. So you're going to be honest about the incredibly difficult task of being a mom, of being a wife, of parenting. And that is so helpful because no one's helped when we lie.
Yeah.
No one's helped when we hide what it actually looks like to be a sinner. Everybody's helped when we talk about what it actually looks like to wrestle through life, because that's when you can actually see that grace and providence are at work, and it's really not us doing it.
Yes,
I love that you model that.
Yeah.
Just,
that's That's beautiful.
Can I do another one?
No. I'm just kidding. My turn.
Yes, Lauren's turn.
I would say it's your courage. And I would put it like this. You have always been one who's willing to take the conversation to a deeper place with me, with others. You've always been the one who's willing to, you're the first mover. You know, like with your friends, it was like, let's take this deeper. Let's be real. Let's be vulnerable.
Yes.
With our boys, like you get ahead of me on things. I don't have to think about all the conversations that, you know, I'll be like, I'm so stressed about this. And you're like, I've already had those conversations. You didn't know that? I'm on that. I'm on top of that.
I do forget to tell you sometimes.
Yeah, he could do better on telling me, but you know, the older our boys get, the more he's on point. They go to him.
Yeah.
Which is great. It's a beautiful thing. and with me, like you are not afraid. Oh, like every time we have a dinner party, you tell people where to sit because you want it to be a rich, meaningful conversation. You're not afraid to be present, to lead.
That's cool.
You're the first to stand up to give a toast at a wedding, and it's always the best toast.
Yeah. We were doing that group hang when we met in Tennessee. You did a toast for something. I was like, what are we toasting? Like, what's happening? And it was amazing. It was so helpful. Like,
you slowed
down the whole moment, and it was super meaningful. I've seen this in action, is all to say.
The courage to bring depth and meaning to situations where people are afraid of being awkward.
Yes.
Justin is not. I mean, I know you're afraid. That's why I'm saying it's courage.
Yeah.
Because everyone feels that tension. Yeah. You just cross the boundary.
Yeah.
And you know, to go to China, to get back together with me when you didn't know what you're doing. You know, all the things.
I have one more question and we'll be done. But the reason I wanted to ask that question is because I want whoever's listening, especially if you're a spouse listening, take that example and ask your spouse what your favorite thing about your marriage is. Because I think we think it, we just don't often say it.
Right.
And it is so good for a spouse. Even I hope both of you are encouraged right now in the sense of like just knowing like, oh, wow, he sees that stuff. And I think there's a lot of things we see that we don't say, a lot of things we forget to say, mean to say. It's not always ill will. It's just sometimes we don't get around to it. So I'd say that's the first practice. But my next question and my last question, and I'll ask you first, Justin, and then Lauren, you can go, or you can mix it up however you want. What does Lauren do that makes you feel the most supported?
I'm debating whether okay.
To be honest, or
not? Honestly, I think when your marriage is strong, you go out into the world in strength.
Yes,
you have an incredible tenacity. I'm just speaking as a man, as a male. You have incredible tenacity, confidence, courage when you feel like things are strong at home.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that is having a good sex life. Like a lot of that is having like feeling like you're for men, like so much of having a good marriage is having good physical intimacy.
Yep.
And I've always.
Yeah. You feel connected.
Yeah. I just always felt that you've intuited that this is an important part of marriage. And I hope that I've intuited that the emotional life is also important. And so I feel like we're both.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I just am always grateful that Lauren, I feel like she is supporting me by loving me in all these ways. And I just feel strength. I feel sent out in strength by you.
Good. That's the goal.
That's a great.
I think I said
she's like, it's working.
Right?
Let me just say this. Like, we have similar, our schedules are different, but I leave and then I come back home. And we have what we call reentry plans, which is not reentry plan is like how we actually, you know, getting back into life together. I've been gone. You've had everything. So we talk about it, and always on the list, at least my list, especially, is when are we making love? Like, when is the first, is it like immediately when we get home, or like 10 minutes after, or like the next day? Where are we at with this? I'll be able to emotionally connect.
I need to know.
All to say, like, it is a part of the connecting, but I'm, you know, joking/ it's a very true thing. That's one of the ways you feel supported. And I think what I hope to just pull out of that for anybody listening, wives, if you are listening, whether that makes sense to your brain or body, or if it makes sense to you, I don't even think that's the point. And this is what I love about what we're talking about. It's not, you know, you even kind of said it.
Yeah.
That's the goal. I'm sure that to you, you're like, I don't need this half as much as he does in this moment. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, but being able to, that's the whole gospel piece. Like, how can we serve each other with what our actual needs are? And so I just wanted to highlight that. But to Lauren, what does Justin do that makes you feel the most supported?
I think, well, the first thing that comes to mind is how he makes me feel supported as a parent is part of it. And it's just like that he is, it's not all up to me.
That's good.
That he is really taking an active and intentional and taking initiative to think over what our boys need and how to disciple them. And that looks differently than I would come up with things. But I think I just, that gives me so much peace to be like, he is on this. Like, he cares about them. You know, just because, like, as a woman, you just can't not think about your kids. You know, when we get together with, like, moms, like, it's hard for us to talk about anything else.
Sure.
You know, and it's not, you know, I have a lot of friendships and, like, we have a lot of shared interests. And it's just, we, someone has to turn the conversation away. And so, like, in my brain, you know, just for him, for me to be like, he, you know. So I do feel really supported in that way. And just that, like, he's giving it his all as a dad. Just, like, so I think especially because of the because they're all boys, it's like he is being, you're leading them and you're there. That, and then I think just like for me as a person is, he's so, you're so encouraging to me. Like, you're always my biggest cheerleader. Yeah. And I'm really,
I'm a big fan.
I'm really hard on myself and he's good about challenging me out of that. So like, you know, I'll be like, I'm the worst. I'm such a bad mom.
And he's like, and I'm like, best. Don't talk bad about my wife like that. I see the same thing to Elizabeth. Do not speak bad about my wife. I love her.
I am, this is so, I didn't know you say that. I literally say the same thing to Elizabeth all the time. Like, that's my wife. Don't talk about her that way.
And you know, it's the, like the voice in your head that you're like, that was God your whole life. And you're like, God isn't mad at me all the time. Why is my inner dialogue so angry?
That inner critic can be so hard.
Yeah, and also like Justin makes everything fun. He brings the fun.
Attaboy.
No,
I present as a seven sometimes.
This is just I mean, unloading the dishes in our house is now touchdown passes with the glasses. Like, this is what is happening.
Touchdown passes with the glasses.
Like, we have mason jars.
If I say, who wants to help me unload the dishwasher?
No one.
Everybody's like, I'm out. If I say, who wants to catch touchdown passes? There will be a fight over who gets to catch the glasses. So I'll take them out of the dishwasher and throw
them. And you're literally throwing the glasses.
Yeah.
I mean, we have mason jars for this reason. They actually don't break a lot, even if you drop them.
It's not
going to
be
amazing.
Real fun if there's not real risk. Like, so it's like, don't drop the touchdown pass, dude. Like, this is fourth quarter. Like, last minute stuff. Catch it. And they get so into unloading the dishwasher.
Like, everything is, I mean, but for me too, you know, he's like, he just, every situation, you're unfazed by challenge, by chaos, by noise. You are like, we are here. Like, let's make it fun. Like, let's make it a good, like, let's be at peace. And I'm
disposition.
Like,
wow,
it could be so much better. And you're like, well, let's, contentment. And like, you've had to fight for that equanimity is the Christian virtue there. And I know you've had to fight extra hard. And so like, when you bring it, I'm like, oh my gosh. Feel so supported. Cause I'm you know, my default is like, if things are not right, it's just a loss. I'm just going to chalk it up. Today's a bad day. I'm
it's
just
over.
Like,
I'm giving away my death right now.
I'm actually going to die. That's what's happening. Death is the only option.
Yeah, I've learned. I feel so supported when you like walk in and you're like, because I've been like trying to get the boys to unload the dishwasher for years, and now like he's like, well, now they do it with you're not there. You don't know this. Whit and Ash, like when I give them that chore, like one of them will be like,
they do touchdown passes.
Oh yeah, they're like, I have the dish chore. You want to come help me?
I'm going to be spending money buying new glasses.
But I think in one sense, $10 on glasses
is worth it.
And mom's sanity, totally worth it.
Yeah.
And, you know, my hope, maybe just to put a bow on this, couldn't be more happy about this conversation. Thank you, guys. And I really think, you know, the hope with this today was just to simply give some real life, maybe even behind the scenes of the reality from both perspectives of what marriage is like, the messiness of family. And, you know, your story, what I love about it, and thank you for your vulnerability and honesty. It's a window into so many different people's lives as well. Like, I hope whatever was, you know, whatever came up for you as you were listening to this, apply some of the stuff. Maybe for some of you, it's touchdown passes with the glasses, right? Like, make that a thing. Like, that's amazing. And I have, you know, majority of girls have one boy and three girls. And the funniest part is like, what motivates my girls? This is gonna make you so angry. Is a chore chart.
Yeah.
So my two daughters, my two youngest ones, we made a chore chart. I didn't even tell them that we were enforcing it. Elizabeth was out of town because her love language is isolation and loneliness. And no, I'm just kidding. Her love language is just like, she just wanted, you know, a couple days away. She loved it. For her 40th birthday, she wanted to go away. I was like, totally get it. So I didn't, she had printed these out before to present them when she got back to kind of put in the rhythm. I just left them on the counter unintentionally.
No threats of corporal punishment? No, like.
Not, I mean, there aren't moments, but not with this. Huh? And they look at the list and they can read and they're like, it says I have to like get up and make my bed and get ready and brush my hair and empty the dishwasher. Okay. Like I never even told them. The first day, Sloan, my youngest, she comes, she's like, and she's all dressed. She has her hairbrush. So I was like, what's going on? She's like, well, I got ready because of the chore chart, and then I emptied my half of the dishwasher because of the list, and I think I'm ready to go for the day.
I think like, we need to stop talking about this. We're getting
it's okay. It's fine.
That's one highlight with like 10 really bad ones.
Following them around the house, like hitting them on the butt with the chore chart. You know, like, here, do this.
And I mean, truly the difference.
Not hitting them.
I'm telling you one very easy / comical thing that is so in juxtaposition to what you're talking about. My son's a similar way, so it's okay. If I'm still, he's 16, I'm like, bro, can you empty? He's like, I got other stuff to do. I was like, actually, the only thing you get to do now is the whole dishwasher. So please just do that. But, you know, we're at that weird stage where no matter what you're, where the kids are, take whatever you got from this. And I would just encourage you to emulate a lot of what you heard today. You know, just taking the time to figure out how to serve one another. You guys, like, so much wisdom and so much care and even just speaking life to one another. What is your favorite part of your marriage? I think it's important to remember that. And so, Lauren, thank you for being the first female voice on the Intentional Fatherhood podcast.
Yeah, and so fun.
Thank you for being a part of it. And obviously, if questions are stirred, send them to hello@intentionalfatherhood.org. But thank you both for today.
You're my favorite, Lauren.
Likewise.